It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
All right, here we are, late in the second week of the Australian Open. We took a week off, but we're back for more on Advantage Connors. Here, as always, your host, Brett Connors. Jimmy, what's up? What are you doing up in Santa Barbara?
Where you been? What's up? You know, I've taken a week off. I missed you. You know, you're down in L.A. I'm in Santa Barbara. We're an hour and a half away from each other. And holy crime, Annette, it's time to be back on the pod. And here we are.
Yep. What's been going on? You good? How's it going up there?
Yeah, everything's good. The week off, I kind of, got involved in a lot of things. I've got back into doing a little more work and working on my golf game. I've been playing a little bit of tennis, but now I'm on the injured reserve again. I guess when you reach, never mind how old I am, but, you know, you get a few aches and pains and so I'm taking a few days off, but looking to be back on the courts in another day or two. But we've missed you. I know you've been busy.
Right. And you're heading down to Florida. I think, I thought I heard you say you're taking a little trip, going to go see OBS.
Yeah, I'm going to take a couple of days and go see OBS. You know, she wanted to come home for Thanksgiving and then Christmas, and then that never happened. So, I'm going to go down, take a trip and spend some time with her and also play in a golf tournament with my friend David Schneider down there. So I'm looking forward to that. But then I got to bring my game back here. All these guys up here, they're looking for me. They want some of their money back. So I got to get back and get on the course with them too.
Nice. Yeah. You and David will be ham and egging it, I'm sure. That'll be fun. You'll have to give us updates and let us know how it goes down there.
I will. I'm the weak link in that pair, but he can carry me pretty good. And if I can, show up a little bit and hit a few good shots and help along the way, that'd be fun. But it'd be good because it gives your mom a break from me and me a break from, from being around and a little change of pace. And I get to see your sister too, which would be great.
Yeah, it'd be good. I haven't seen her. I'd like to catch up with her soon too. It's been a while. One thing before we get into all the tennis and everything that I wanted to say was we've talked about this before with the sauna and the steam and our cold showers, everything.
Yeah.
I've seen this thing. It's been advertised to me nonstop on Instagram. So the algorithm must listen to the podcast or something. But have you seen these little mini, like kind of, they call them saunas, but they're not saunas. They're like a little steam. So it's like this little.
You sent me a picture of yours. I saw it.
Yeah. So I got one. They got me fine. After 5,000 views on Instagram, I gave in and bought one. It's cool. It's like this little kind of mini tent. It's big enough pretty much for just one person. I guess you could kind of fit two in there if you really want to get snug. And it zips up, it's airtight, and it has like a little hole in it where you put this hose, and then the hose attaches to this like little, it looks like a little humidifier almost. And you pour a gallon of water and half a gallon of water in it. Turn it on, it heats it up to pretty much a boil, and then it shoots steam into the little tent. And so,
so far
I've had it about a week. It came with a free cold plunge.
Oh no. Oh no.
I haven't tried that one out yet. That's a lot to fill it up with the ice, but I got it and the steam's pretty good. You know, I have a little treadmill in the apartment that I use when I don't want to go to the gym. And so I've tried it out a couple nights after that and it gets a good sweat and I like it. I have to say.
So what's the amount of time you have to spend in there? Are you in there 10, 15 minutes? Does it get heated up, 100 and, like a normal steam does it?
It gets pretty hot. I mean, it's like this little mini kind of like machine. So it's not like this huge industrial sized, it's like tons of humidifier. So it's cranking as hard as it can to put out the steam. But yeah, I mean, it has like this little circle thing that with a top, so you can kind of put like eucalyptus or if you have any sort of aromatherapy that you want to add to it, which is kind of neat.
Boy.
And then it kind of comes out through the holes in the side of it. So you go in there and you sit on the little chair and you kind of stick that right underneath you, and then the heat just comes up and you just drip. So
Oh boy, it's good.
I think you'd like it. I think you'd like it.
Well, I'm gonna come down when I get back and come over to your place and see it. And if it's what you're saying it is, I'm gonna get one.
Okay, I'll get you one. I might have to get you one for your birthday or belated Christmas present.
Okay, that's perfect. sounds like a good thing. But a lot going on,
Yep, down under.
We got rain up here, and you know, this is our rainy season, and for us to get some good rain, I know you've had some too, and you know, I hate to talk about the weather, but for us it's important because it fills up our lakes and our reservoirs and everything. And there's a lot of things going on up here, Brett, that not only the weather, but which I like because it kind of feeds us for the rest of the year. But we've had some unbelievable things happen right around our house, and right across. We live right across from Burnham Woods, which is a great golf course in a gated community. So we've had coyotes come down. We've had black bears come down. And just about a month ago, there was a mountain lion cruising the Burnham Woods.
Across the street,
which is right across the street from us, and it's pretty amazing. And they have it on tape, and we got a copy of it. It's amazing. I mean, he's in the gated community, and he goes, and there's like an 8 or 10 foot fence that he has to jump over to get over out of the gated community and back into the hills, and he's in a sitting position, and all of a sudden he just zoom springs up, sits on the column railing, whatever, and just cruises on.
Nice. That's crazy.
But you know, for us, you know, with a lot of people here have little animals. You know, we have dogs, we have cats, we have a lot of little animals running around, and it's crazy that happens. We've seen that before when we have been in a drought. You know, the animals coming water. Down, but now we're flush with water, and they're still cruising. So I don't know. We're going to have to start being a little bit careful. You know, we take our little bogey, our little mini schnauzer. Yeah. Bella's gone on that walk too, down, through the fields and so forth. And we're going to have to start being a little careful now, but you know, what the hell, little excitement in Santa Barbara.
Yep. Yep. Definitely. I think they lived there long before any of us did though. I have a feeling.
Yep. Yeah. We're cruising on their territory. You're right.
Right. Yeah. I saw something online. It was so sad. It was like, somewhere they had built some fence, and it had a video, and it was this, but looked like a black bear. And if she was just butting up against the fence, because like, you know, for years, these animals followed these paths, you know, like generation after generation, you know, it's like built into their DNA to know the area and the surroundings so well, like elephants, a lot like that. But this bear like was stuck behind this fence, and it couldn't get around it, you know, and it's like, it doesn't know what to do then, because it's probably, you know, using that path, you know, for 20 years or something, who knows.
But you gotta
be careful with the pups. Just, you know, usually after dark, I'm guessing they mostly come out.
Exactly. So just anybody who goes out walking, a friend of our podcast, Spencer Segura, he was just up spending a couple of days with me and your mom here, and we had a blast with him as always. And he's down in LA now. And he was telling us that's happening down there too.
Yeah.
You know, so you really got to be on the alert. So boy, oh boy, it's, but yeah, hey, we get up every morning and, I walk, I hike and I look up and, you know, we've got, you know, red-tailed hawks, which are, you know, probably tied with my first, which is cheetahs, my favorite animals. But the red-tailed hawks are amazing. I love watching them and cruise, and I've seen them come down and grab their prey and so forth. And it's an amazing sight. And nature is unbelievable. You know, I can't believe, listen, I'm a tennis guy, I'm a sports guy, but I'm talking about nature. Maybe I should, maybe we should move on to something I know a little bit about.
Yeah, we got the Wolf Moon out tonight. Wolf Moon. I'm guessing they named it that because the wolves used to howl at it when it would come out. What do you think?
Yeah. How about that? You know, that, yeah. but you know, we had just gotten home right before I called you. We had gone out to dinner, and as we were coming home, we had an amazing straight view at the moon, and you know, a full moon, and the brightness, the shine, the wolf moon is out tonight. So I might leave my window open and see if I can hear a few. Oh,
you'll hear something, I think.
How good would that be? It'd be exciting.
Be really good. But yeah, I got it right outside my window here. Let's dip into a little tennis. I know you probably got an early flight tomorrow, so I don't want to keep you up too late. Off to my left right now is about to get started, Djokovic and Sinner, which is mm-hmm. We'll get into these two. The two great men's semifinals tonight, Joker versus Sinner, probably the match that everyone's been thinking about since the draw came out. On the other side, Zverev and Medvedev will be playing about 4 or 5 hours after this one gets going. But I just wanted to get your thoughts on a couple other topics that came up earlier in the tournament. Have you been watching a little some of the storylines I've seen? One from the first week that I wanted to get your take that I thought was cool was Adrian Mannarino. Did you see this?
Making
a run. Old school type player. Kind of reminds me of you in some ways. I mean, he's a lefty. Strings his rackets at like something like 11 kilos, you know, 24 pounds. You know, is really good at redirecting and you know, he's having almost the most success in his career these last couple of years. He's won 4 out of the 5 tournaments he's won in his career these last couple of years, and you know, was able to take out Ben Shelton, who we've talked about before, is this, you know, up and coming young, you know, beast of a kid, just, you know, crushes the ball, huge serve, you know, can hit it good on both sides, fast. And Mannarino was able to take him out in like one of the more entertaining matches of the tournament. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that, since I know you love the old school style and that's how you played a lot of ways.
Yeah, you about said it all, son. I mean, you know, you have a guy who's 35, 36 years old, and it just goes to show that, you know, if you stay in there and you keep grinding and you keep trying and working and striving to, you know, to be better than you think you should be. And you figure it out. I mean, he strings his racket old school style, loose, you know, 24, 25 pounds, 11, 12 kilos. That's almost unheard of. But you know, he understands, you know, the trampoline effect. Yeah. And how that affects the, you know, the big hitters and those who have are just throwing power and power and power at him every time, you know, to come up and bring his old school game and his old school attitude and also his old school age, you know, into that. You know, some guys, you know, are late bloomers and you know, you got to hand it to him that, you know, he stayed in there and he's fought his way and he's finding his success now. And, you know, to do that just goes to show, I mean, you know, tennis is a young man's game. And, you know, we've talked about that. Everybody forgets about those intangibles, you know, and we've also talked about that, you know, the mental toughness and the guts and the sacrifice and the heart, the never give up and all that, you know, also enters into it, you know, that shows, you know, what, you know, that a guy like Mannarino, that he has been willing to take the punishment, you know, for how many years since he's been in the game to find the success. It's an amazing story. It's an amazing story. And I'm happy as hell for a guy like that. I'm rooting for him.
Yep. Well, this was also funny. I thought that related to you was that he never has a sponsor. I mean, he might have like a racket sponsor, but I don't think he has a clothing deal. He doesn't have a shoe deal. And that reminded me of when you came back in 91 and no one wanted to sponsor you. I think everyone wanted to give you like free gear and all this stuff, but no one wanted to actually give you the money. And so you had like Nike shoes and Reebok's shirt and then this, and you know, like 3 or 4 different things. And then you had that one pair of shoes that you guys made up that had literally on the back in letters, pink letters, for rent on the back of the old Nikes, those old Nikes you wore in 91.
I even hate to tell you, I still have those shoes. I still have that pair of shoes. But it's true. you know, I was out for a year, and you know, if you're not catching up with the young kids coming up, you're a forgotten entity in tennis. And you know, so I came back, and you know, I was I had the racket deal that I was playing with, and that, which was fine and all that, but you know, I didn't have a shoe contract or a clothes contract or whatever, mm-hmm. and I'm you know coming back and you know trying to you know figure out you know what am I going to wear on a nightly basis. So I just put For Rent on the back of my shoes, yeah. And you know, that was the idea of our buddy Bill Lelly.
Yep.
You know, he came up and he made those up. He says, here, wear those out there, see what they say.
Yeah.
And, you know, which was kind of cool. And, you know, but, you know, what the hell? I mean, you know, he's doing what he loves to do, Brett.
Yeah.
Mannarino, I'm talking about, you know, he's out playing tennis and he's found his success. And can you imagine the feeling that he gets now with going out and taking his game and everything that he's been through against these great young players and beating them?
Yeah.
What a feeling that's got to be for him. I'm happy for a guy like that who is, you know, is not given in, you know, that yeah. has showed, you know, that, you know, listen, I love this sport. I love this game. I'm good at this game and I can get better. And he's proven that and he's finding success. Good for him.
Yep. I also thought it was interesting that he says he never looks to see who his next opponent is. Like, he doesn't look at the draws. He's like, he really tries hard not to look until like an hour before. And like he said, somebody, one of the drivers or something, you know, normally doesn't say anything. And then the driver was like, hey, good luck against Munar tomorrow. And he's like, oh, I guess I play Munar.
Right.
Yep. So I thought that's kind of interesting. He's an interesting dude, man. I mean, it's cool to see a guy, you know, there's all the
But you know what though, Brett, I like that because, you know, if you know who you're playing, then you're going to play your game to try to fit that. You know, why try to change your game for that? Go play your game. You know, the game that has been successful for you and that has gotten you to this position. You know, whether that was the third round or whatever, I don't know. But, you know, obviously you're playing good tennis to get to this point. Why change that?
Right.
You know, and that's kind of the way I always felt, you know, and I like that because I never looked at the draw. I looked at the draw one time and way back at the beginning when I first, you know, was trying to, you know, break in and everything. And I said, oh, I play so-and-so in the quarters. Well, I didn't make it out of the first round. You know, so that was the last time I ever looked at the draw.
Yeah.
And I always thought my game was good enough that, you know, whoever I played, it was good enough. And if it wasn't, then I didn't make it through, but you know, I'll play you again. So I'm going to get better. And it seems like this kid's got that same attitude, you know, that, you know, I'm going to play my game and if you're good enough to beat it, go for it.
Yeah. And I think his game is kind of all almost like totally like a changeup, you know, all of it. You know, he plays so different. He hits the ball, you know, flat and low so it doesn't bounce up very high. You know, uh-oh. He doesn't take a big backswing.
Watch out.
I know
watch
you like
out.
That. But I think, you know, like I don't think he would all of a sudden start, you know, there's not a lot of the other games he would go to. He's not going to all of a sudden become like a huge power player. You know, he's pretty crafty at the net. I mean, some of the volleys he hit were against Shelton were ridiculous. But yeah, man, it's just an entertaining story. He's going to be inside the top 20, closing in on the top 15, I think. And fun to watch in the indoor tournaments in February. You know, there's a couple.
Yeah. You know, those flat low shots on the indoor tournaments might pay dividends for him too, you know?
Yep. Definitely.
You know, if the courts get a little faster and he strings his racket loose. Some guys, Borg strung his racket, pull it as tight as you can. Right. And mm-hmm. that's how his, you know, he played indoors, outdoors, clay courts, whatever like that. I didn't. I was a little not quite that loose, but I was a little looser. I like that trampoline effect, you know, where the ball would kind of zing off your racket. And if he's indoors with, you know, and he hits that low flat ball, you know, with the way these guys play now and the grips they have and as far back as they play, some of them, hopefully it pays dividends for him. I'll be watching him.
Yep, me too. Here's another story. Djokovic cruising along. He's about to start with Sinner. He's 10-0 in his career in Australian Open semifinals and 10-0 in the finals. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But something I wanted to talk about that stood out earlier in the week, he was getting heckled from a guy sitting behind the court in one of his early round matches. And it just made me think of a story I remember with you. And I wanted to see if you wanted to talk about it, where weren't you playing in like a WTC event and something happened with mom? Can you remind us of that story?
Oh, well, hecklers, you mean? And
yeah,
and
the heck. Yeah.
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, you know, the way I always looked at those who came and were the hecklers, you know, at least you're paying your money to come see me play. You know, whether you're for me or against me, you can root either way you want to. But I'm just glad you're there, you know, and you know, being a part of, you know, of what I had to offer you. And if I won and you were pissed off, so that's even better, you know. But you know, going back, I mean, there's stories over the past. I was playing a tournament in Salisbury, Maryland one time, and I just had a tough match. I walked off the court and some guy that was was one of the sponsors, main sponsor's sons, came out and grabs your mom.
He was a sponsor, right?
I didn't know it at the time.
Right.
If I did, I'd hit him one more time. he came out and grabbed your mom around the neck and tried to kiss her, you know, and mm-hmm. I just lost a match and I'm walking off and I see that and my friend who was standing right next to me goes, uh-oh, you know, but I mean, that's all part of it, Brett, you know, that's what makes it. I mean, why do you think in the 70s and the early 80s, tennis shot to the top, you know, because we accepted the hockey fan and the football fan and the baseball fan and the basketball fan that came in and wanted to see more than two guys, you know, hitting balls back and forth, running around in a pair of white shorts. They wanted to see that. They wanted to be a part of what we were doing, like they did in the sport that they really liked before they came to tennis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was a part of it. You're not going to please everybody. You know, if you can win everybody over, you'd be president. But
what happened after you grabbed him and you kind of like you shook him or whatever? Did he say I'm sorry or did he apologize?
Well, I don't know. I went on and did my thing. What happened after that? I don't know what happened. I don't know. I got out of there in a hurry. That's you fun. Know, but you know the that's what makes the game, in my opinion. You know, the crowd, the interaction with the crowd, the feelings of the crowd, the way the crowd comes down and plays on the court with you, mm-hmm. you know, liking you or and being on your side, or not liking you and being on your opponent's side and doing whatever they can to get them to win or to me to lose or however you want to look at it. I didn't really care. I just wanted them there
and be involved.
Exactly. You know, so I don't know. I mean, you know, Joker's been around long enough. You know, he knows what it's like. Yeah, you know, but since Nadal is kind of been away and Federer's gone now, you know, he's kind of the guy. So he thinks that he should be the one that's been not to be nonstop loved, you know, and it doesn't work that way all the time. You know, everybody's got their favorites. And the only thing you do is go out and play your game and be you. You know, and that's what I was told from the very beginning. You don't want to be anybody else. You just go be you and you pay the price for it. Well, either win or lose, whatever, just, you know, be you you know, whatever else happens along the way, kind of embrace that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he handled it well. He got heckled and or whatever the guy said, and he stepped up and hit an ace on match point to end the match. So you're right. The people who are the best have to be good dealing with it, because, you know, that's part of sports. I mean, imagine if you said, oh, my gosh, I got heckled at a football game. I mean,
could you imagine?
Everyone's there heckling. So, yeah, that's funny. I remember mom saying something like he was pretty apologetic. The kid who did it, you know, he didn't realize, you know, kind of what he was doing. He probably got caught up in the moment. And then all of a sudden you got your hands on him and you're seeing red and. I don't know what happened after that.
Me neither. I have a short memory.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for candidates isn't to search at all. Don't search, but match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates super fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. That's according to a recent Indeed survey. The thing I like about Indeed is that it's your one-stop shop. I know I always say that, but it's got everything you need at your fingertips. You just type in Indeed, you go there, they take care of you, anything you need and everything, they answer all your questions. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join the more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And guess what, guys? My favorite part. Listeners of this show get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your job more visible at Indeed.com/Connors. That's right. You just got to go to Indeed.com/Connors right now and support our show. Advantage Connors by saying you heard it here. It really helps us out. Indeed.com/Connors. Terms and conditions apply. Do you need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. Before we dive into just these two men's semis, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the women's side. Did you see the match of the tournament was Sinner Joker on the men? On the women, the match of the tournament that everyone's kind of been talking about, waiting for, was Coco Gauff and our girl Sabalenka.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Camp. They played last night. And it was an interesting match. Sabby, you know, they played in the finals of the U.S. Open. Sabby was up. Coco was able to, you know, keep grinding, you know, keep a couple more balls in play. And Sabby started making some errors and was able to come back and win her first Grand Slam. A little different story. The first set was back and forth. Sabby jumped up like 5-2. Coco came back and was serving for it at 6-5. It went to a breaker. And then Sabby kind of, she didn't roll from there, but she played pretty well. She served well. She only had two double faults. It was Coco who had the double fault problem. And now she'll play Kenwin Zhang in the final. This is the young up-and-coming Chinese player. She's 21. Makes the finals 10 years since Li Na won down there. That was the last Australian Open I worked at in Melbourne, 2014. Right. So I remember that one well. So I just wanted to get your take. Sabby, backing up last year's performance, she's now won 13 matches in a row at the AO. And then Zhang, it's a pretty good story. I mean, I watched her match against Jastrzemska, and she's fun to watch, man. She's got a lot of game, hits it hard, and can move really well.
Yeah, but you got to look at the experience side of it. You know, so, you know, and Sabby getting through and beating Gauff in the semis, I think that was a big confidence booster for her. You know, you can never count out somebody who's there for their first time. It works two ways. It's either she's going to look at it like, oh my God, I'm in the Australian Open final. You know, should I be here? And am I, is this my position? I'm playing Sabalenka. She was last year's champion, you know, and all this. Or is she going to say, I deserve to be here. I've worked my way here. I'm young. It's my turn to take over, and I want to do it. Now, she's gotten to the final, so obviously she's playing the best, you know, some very good tennis. And I know the women's draw was really upset early. A lot of the top seeds lost early, so maybe it kind of opened up a lane along the way for her to get there. But still, you can't say that. You know, she had to beat her opponents to get there, no matter who they were. And so obviously she's playing good tennis. But I think Sabalenka beating Coco in the semis after losing to her in the U.S. Open, I think was a big thing for her. And she's playing somebody young. So, she, you know, the intimidation factor might also be there, Brett. Mm-hmm. You know, that, you know, the way she presents herself, and, you know, knowing that she's been there and she's got the credentials. And if I'm betting on it, I'm betting on Sabalenka. Mm-hmm. But if I also know there's also these young kids who come up, and I was one at one time who doesn't give a damn. You know, right. they're just going to go out and just cut loose and play their game, you know, and give it everything they have. And that's dangerous.
Right.
That's very dangerous. And I say that from experience.
Well, talk about playing with house money. I mean, she can go out there and let it rip, swing away. Everyone's expecting Sabby to win. I mean, Sabby's a big favorite. I just pulled up the line. She's -510.
Whoa.
So you can get Zhang for about +350 if you like that.
That's for a final, Brett.
Right. I know.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's crazy odds.
Yep. I must say, I mean, I like Zhang. She's been trending now for a couple of years. People have been talking about her and she's been making the steps, and, you know, I think she's the 12th seed, you know, so she'll probably break into the top 10, after this week or something. But I'm proud of Sabby just because going into last year, you know, or going into the start of 23, you know, everyone was like, she's one of the best to not win a slam. You know, she chokes in the moments, blah, blah, blah. And what does she do? She wins Australia, you know, and then backs it up with a good spring, you know, winning a couple titles, making the final at Indian Wells. And then she made the semis of all the other slams. Yeah, she had some hiccups along the way, but she's at least making those semis. You know, all of a sudden she's in the final four, like, of every slam. And then she comes in here. You're like, well, you know, is she going to be nervous? Is the pressure of being the defending champion? It's the first time she's got to do it. And boom, she's in the finals again as a prohibitive favorite, you know, and she avenges her loss to Goff, which I think that's going to be a fun little rivalry going forward. Just the back and forth, the two different styles and how they match up is fun. And yeah, man, I like Sabby a lot, and I'm just, you know, proud of her and happy that she's in the finals again.
Yeah. We know she's got game. You know, and it seems sometimes that the only one that can beat her is herself. And I think once she separates that, and the more, listen, I know she's been around for a while, but still, experience is experience. And the more you play, the more matches you win, the more tournaments you win, the more great players you play against, the more you figure out a way not to beat yourself. And that's key. And I say that because I remember growing up with your mom and with your grandma and your great grandma, and then also with Pancho. When I would go out there, that, you know, and here's what they'd say: be you. Don't be any better than you. So in other words, that said, don't beat yourself. Only play your game. Don't try to be anybody else. And whatever happens, happens. You know, right. but that is something that you know, you either take in your mind and say that, shit, that's tough to do though, Brett. You know, what do you mean, don't be me? Or I only got to be me. You know, why can't I be Gonzalez? You know, why can't I be Labor? Why can't I be, you know, whoever? But you're only you, and that's why you go out and you work and you train and you sacrifice and you do everything you can to be the best that you can be. And once you get that in your head, then it's almost like a free pass. Then you just go out and play.
Right.
You know, because then winning and losing is only part of what you're doing. You know, and the idea is to win, right? That's the idea.
Yeah.
So definitely. give yourself a chance, every chance that you can to do that. And the only way you can do that is to be yourself. And the reason I got into that is because I think Sabby has found that, you know, especially when it comes time to come back and try to win it again, and to do that you know, you've been there before, and you've got all the goods necessary to do it. And if you had the goods a year ago, why don't you have the goods now?
Right.
And it seems like that's the way she's playing. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree, man. I'm a big Sabby fan. I think you're right. I think there's been all these little, you know, goals or little, you know, markers that, you know, she hadn't done before 2023. Mm-hmm. And then she keeps like doing them, you know, and then she backs it up. And then, okay, she lost that match to Goff at the US Open. That had to be a really tough one for her to take. And then she comes back yesterday, you know, gets up 5-2, you know, okay, everything's good. Oops. Now the Goff's serving 4-6, 5, instead right. of like, panicking. You know, she gets level, gets in the breaker, starts serving good in the breaker, you know, boom, wins the set. Now she's feeling okay. Because that match could have swung. Like if she had won that set, it might have gone the other way quickly. You never know.
Right.
But those were the moments before where she would go off the rails maybe a little bit. And now, you know, she was able to compose herself, come out and just keep playing aggressive, serving well, and, you know, and just, you know, doing her thing. So I'm happy for her. I think it's going to be an interesting, fun final. Either way, I'm be happy with the winner, but I'm going to be pulling for Sabby. And yeah, what do you think?
I like it.
Who do you like?
I mean, it's tough to go against the champ,
right?
That price is an awful big price for a final.
Yeah, it is.
If you were asking me if I'm going to bet on it, I'd say I think I'll sit with my feet up with a cold beer watching it.
Yeah,
that's the way I'm thinking.
Or look to get a better line on the live line. Maybe
that's even better. But I don't know how to do that. You know how to do all that.
I'll help you. I can help
you. Okay, that's a deal.
All right. Let's go to the men's side before we wrap up. Two great semis, Joker, Sinner, match that everyone's been talking about. Give me your, 2 minutes on this match. I mean, Sinner's looked great. It feels like something switched with Sinner. That's what everyone's saying. In the fall last year, he's been playing amazing ever since. He's been like living up to his top, you know, what is he? He's the 4 seed. He's playing right now. They just started. So, and then Djokovic obviously cruising along, doing what he does. You know, we all expect it. But then now Sinner versus Joker. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a perfect matchup. That's what you want. I mean, you've got the older guy, Djokovic, who has won 22-3 Grand Slams and, you know, 95 other tournaments. I'm sorry?
I think 24.
Okay, 24. I'm one behind. but you have the new kid, Sinner, who, you know, we've been touting him for, you know, for a while now, you mm-hmm. know, to come through and to break through and to really grab his place, even though he's had success, but he hasn't had that success in a Grand Slam yet.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right there or wrong?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, the thing with Sinner is he's been building. It seems like he's the one guy who isn't listening to the outside noise. He's got a plan with, you know, with Cahill and his other coaches. And he's just been kind of methodically kind of, like the same with Sabby, where he's starting to knock off these goals and these markers. And now the next one is he needs to, you know, win a Grand Slam semifinal. And then who does he have across the net? But 10-time Australian Open champion, Novak Djokovic.
Yeah, but what an opportunity. You know, mm-hmm. this is an opportunity to really to grab your time and space here. To beat a 10-time Australian Open champion, you know, in the semifinals, you know, to keep him possibly from winning number 11, what an opportunity for him, you know, to show his goods and to show what, you know, his worth and what he has been working on. I mean, you're right. Last fall, he had a very successful fall, very successful, but this is a Grand Slam. It's the Australian Open, and this is where, I mean, you can win tournaments around the world. You can do all the good things and whatever. But in today's times, and it's been documented that the Grand Slams are the most important. Am I right there or wrong?
Yep, it seems like it. I mean, that's the legacy stuff, and that's what everyone talks about the most and gets up for. I mean, it's 3 out of 5, so you figure it's the hardest test for the men on the men's side, at least. What do you think about that? It being 3 out of 5, and Sinner sometimes in the past having, some physical problems late in events where he's had to pull out or, you know, with the longer matches. I mean, he's been playing pretty fast here, but if he gets stuck in a long 4-5 setter with Djokovic, do you think that could become an issue?
Well, it could be because, you know, Joker's going to be able to stay in there for 5 hours. You know that. I remember, you know, years and years ago when Djokovic was having trouble playing two out of three sets, you know, I mean, I'm going back 12, huh?
Way back in the day. Yeah.
Way back in the day, 12, 13, 14 years ago, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, he changed his habits to stay in the kind of shape that he is. But I mean, at 36 years old, I think he is 35, 36 years old. I mean, to go out and play these young guys, he dedicates himself to this game.
Yeah.
He does everything he can to stay in there as long as he can and to beat these young guys up. And that dedication that he is giving to his career, you only have one career. You only have one shot, you know, at this, you know, and he is doing everything he can to win as much as he can, to stay in there as long as he can, and to kick the young guy's ass as long as he can. And for that, the dedication and everything he's put into that, how can you not admire that?
Yeah.
You know, to just, you know, not that he doesn't have other things going on. He's got family, he's got this, he's got that. Of course he does. But his main thought, you know, and in today's times, and we've talked about this, Brett, is these guys have every opportunity to do things that make them better than they are. And as good as Djokovic has been over the years, he's still trying to do things to be better than he is or should be or wants to be. And
trying to improve
every day.
Yeah.
Every day, mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, conditioning wise, you know, if something happens to him and he, you know, it's almost like, what the hell happened? You know, Jesus, is he all right? You know, yeah. Because, you know, he's going to be ready to play when he walks out there. So I'm looking for a really good match. And you know that why we've always said these young guys, Djokovic isn't going to give it to him. He's not. Sinner's going to have to earn it. And he's going to have to go out there and he's going to have to play whatever match is necessary to win three sets, not two. He's got to win three sets to beat Djokovic, who you know is going to be primed and ready to go. So that's going to be an intriguing match because we've been touting Sinner for a number of years now, you know, mm-hmm. and he's won tournaments. He's, you know, he's number four in the world, which is all great, but Grand Slams are Grand Slams. And it's 2 weeks, three out of five sets playing against the best players that are in the best shape and going up against the best player in the world right now, Djokovic. So going to be interesting, interesting final.
I think
semifinal.
So.
I'm sorry.
Yep. Yeah, and then either winner that comes through it, you know, will be, you know, either Joker's going for number 11 or Sinner's going for his first Grand Slam. I mean, this is a match that in the big picture of the sport, we've been kind of looking forward to with regards to Sinner.
Right.
It's like, okay, he's in the semi, you know, he's playing the best that he's been playing maybe ever in his career. And he's playing, you know, a 24-time Grand Slam champion Joker. So bring it on. Let's go. Let's see where it's a great test for him and to see where he is. And if he can beat Joker for the first time at this level of the tournament, then like, what a great story.
Yeah. Great story is right.
Okay. We'll go to the other semi, Med and my man, Zverev, who's been taking a lot of heat this tournament, in the press room with, regards to the, all the, you know, he's got the court case in Germany with his ex-girlfriends and stuff. I don't want to get into that, but,
no.
The thing I wanted to talk to you about, a lot of people asked on our Facebook page, shout out to everyone for putting up some good questions. This one came up a lot and I wanted to get your take. Everyone was wondering, you know, what's up with Alcaraz? Since Alcaraz lost to Zverev, he didn't really look so great in that match, especially the first two and a half sets. And then he was able to kind of get a little momentum, push it to a fourth, but Zverev played unbelievably. When Zverev's forehand and serve are on, he's tough. Because he has a good, you know, his backhand is pretty good. But what do you think about Alcaraz? Is he in a funk? Is it too much? Is expected too soon? He's still just a 20-year-old kid. Where are you standing with all that?
Yeah, but you know, if you look at Alcaraz at being, you know, 20 years old, he's pretty mature for 20. Excuse me. He's, you know, he's won the U.S. Open. He's won Wimbledon. And, you know, for a kid that's 20 years old to have had that success, you know, but, you know, also, you know, once you get that success, you got a lot of other hands grabbing at you, you know, to do other things and to take your mind off of, you know, really what you're supposed to be doing. And that's winning tournaments. You know, I don't know if what's going on there. That's not none of my business, but I just know how that goes, that sometimes your mind gets taken away from, you know, from the job at hand, which is winning. With Alcaraz, his game is pretty demanding, Brett. I mean, the way he plays, and, you know, even though he mixes his game up, he's still, he's still got that, the Nadal, mindset of the way he plays, grinding and running and, you know, going after everything. And that takes a toll on you. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong saying that? Or, I mean, that's kind of the view I get of him. Am I right or wrong?
I mean, I think you're right. I think that's why a lot of people love him and enjoy watching him play, is he plays like you or Nadal, or, you know, someone who's going to give everything they got. Yeah, I wonder. I think it's a mix of a bunch of stuff. I feel like he's had so much success already. Like you said, winning Wimbledon last year, you know, and he still made the semis at the U.S. Open. He still made the quarters here. You know, I mean, it's obviously not what you expect from a top two or three seed, but his coach wasn't there. I know he was at home getting a surgery on his knee, I think. But I think it's one of those things where, like, everyone's been talking how great Sinner's playing and all this stuff, and Sinner's still never won a semi. And then, you know, here's a guy 2 years younger than him who's got two slams, and everyone's kind of crushing on him, you know, just because he's had a little bit of like a down spell. I mean, he's still learning. This is still, you know, second or third time around the calendar. But I mean, he was 7-5 post US Open coming into the Australian Open. So, you know, he hadn't been playing a lot of matches just in general. I don't think he didn't play a warm-up tournament. And so, you know, it's hard to come into a slam with no match play and just win it. But, right. You know, I don't know. I just think it's a lot is expected, and everyone's wanted to, you know, dub it the new generation. He's here, he's taking over, and this and that. And it's like, hey, there's other guys out there who still try, you know, Zverev's out there grinding and trying to get better every day too.
Right.
So, you know, it's just, I think he ran into a guy who was playing really good, and his form maybe dipped a little when he started to play a better opponent. He'd had, you know, a decent, easy draw so far, pretty much. And I just think that, you know, give him time. It's just one of those things where he's going to be here for a long time. So if he's not, you know, immediately great right after he wins Wimbledon, you know, dominating always, it's still going to be okay.
Yeah, but you know what, though, Bretter? You can't let up for a minute in this game. You can't, because there's always somebody over your shoulder. You know, he may be 20, but there's some there's a 17 or 18-year-old kid that's eyeing him from behind. You know, and you better keep your eye in that rear view mirror. You know, he's 20, 21, 22. You know, when he becomes that, he's got to look both directions now. Right. He's got to look at the guys in front of him, the guys that are a little older than him, like Zverev, who just beat him, and Medvedev and Sinner, and now he's still Djokovic and Tsitsipas, and, you know, and then what about those 17 and 18 year old kids that are coming up behind him?
Yeah.
So, you know, you cannot let up for a minute in this game, because, you know, it's not just a one match, one tournament, one week, one, you know, 1 year does not make a career. You know, it's 15 years makes a career, 20 years makes a career, tournaments won make a career. And if you let up 1 second, you know, somebody's, you know, going to beep that horn and pass you. You know, and it's how fast you get back on track, you know, that's going to make the difference here. I mean, because confidence is a big thing, you know, and if you've lost your confidence, you know, and you start losing matches, not only to the top guys, but to guys that you say, well, you know, what the hell? How can I lose that match? You know, when you start feeling that way, then it gets in your head. Then once it gets in your head, then it gets in your game. Right. Where you don't think your game is good enough. You know, it's been good enough for him to win a Wimbledon and a U.S. Open, so it's not his game.
Right.
You know, so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, see how he breaks out of this. But I, you know, listen, you know, you said it, he's young, right?
Yeah, I think
he'll work his way out of it.
Definitely will. And I think it might be one of those things too, where he's gotten to this point almost off of sheer like raw talent in a way, where like, I think there's still a lot of improvement for him that he could do in like sort of tactics and like kind of strategy on like, you know, how to play certain opponents and what to go to and, you know, where to serve. You know, I think I heard something that he was like asking his coach in the box, like on the court, where to serve at the US Open, you know, like, you know, maybe figure, you know, he has time to learn all these sorts of things being only 20. And so you never know. He might not have been healthy in the fall. He might have been playing tournaments he shouldn't have been for whatever reason. Who knows? But I mean, he'll be all right. He just needs to start playing more matches. You know, he's only played 12 matches since the year, whatever. What is it now? It's four or five more. So 17 matches since the US Open. I think he'll be all right. And Zverev's been starting to play better. Like last 9-10 months, he's been, you know, beating a lot of guys. I mean, he beat Sinner at the US Open in that night match that I was working when I was there and played really well. And so I just think it's just one of those things where, you know, his level dips. Zverev was playing really good, not missing shots he normally does, and he was able to come through. But
in the meantime, Alcaraz is lost in the quarters and Zverev plays Medvedev in the semis.
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see if Zverev can keep that going, that kind of tennis going, that was good enough to beat Alcaraz. Is it good enough to beat Medvedev also, and then go on and win the tournament? Because Medvedev's had success. You know, he's won a U.S. Open. Right. So, you know, he knows what it's like to win too. So that's going to be a heck of a matchup between the two of them. To, you know, listen, the semis of the men's was Sinner and Joker and Medvedev and Zverev. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be some good tennis there. And whoever is going to be interesting to see what intangible comes through to win, because, you know, obviously all four of them are playing, you know, good enough tennis, great tennis to get to the semis of a Grand Slam. So something's going to have to break, for one of them to win. So it's going to be interesting to see what that is.
Yeah. I think this is the first time they've played 19 times. And I think this might be the first time in a slam. Med has the head-to-head 12-7, but last year alone, Med beat him 5 out of 6. Zverev finally got him in the summer. But I bet on Zverev in a few of those matches. I remember like thinking, this is the match he's going to break through. This is the match he's going to break through. and he did not. I think it's going to be a good one. I think one of the reasons he was in a better position than Alcaraz is he had played a bunch of more matches too. He played the ATP Cup and I think one of the warmups. And I think it's tough like to come in if you're not playing good quality guys. Like he played like Jerry Shang, the player who retired the round before. So like he's a good player, but he's not like Zverev level yet. So I think it's tough to come in and just get dropped in and have play a guy who's playing good and has a lot of matches already under his belt. So.
Yeah, well, you know, we've always said, Brett, that there's no substitute for match play. You know, you can go and practice and work and train and do everything you want, but that match play and knowing what it's like to hit shots under pressure and when the match is on the line, you know, there's no substitute for that. And going into an Australian Open, you know, one of the four biggest tournaments, over the calendar year. Yeah. You know, and not having, you know, some matches under your belt is, I don't know. I mean, that seems a little odd for me, but everybody's got their own training habits and they've got their coaches and they've got, you know, five or six people, right, you know, running with them and helping them along the way. So, you know, obviously they know more than I do. So, they'll figure it out. Might take them a minute, but they'll figure it out.
Yep, I think so. I'm looking forward to that one. I think that could be a fun match. I might have to stay up to watch that one.
Oh, no.
Either way, though, I mean, Med's had a couple long matches already. I mean, Zverev has two. So we'll see if fitness has anything to do with the outcome of that one.
They're about the same age, though, right? Medvedev and Zverev, they're about, 27, 28, something like that?
was 27. So yeah, like a year, well, yeah. Like the
other, yeah, a year younger. And so, yeah, you know, I don't think conditioning should be a problem for them. You know, they played some good matches, you know, which I guess one way you look at that is, you know, you're playing yourself into shape. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm sorry.
You kind of had the off season. So you almost, I mean, you're not that you want to go long, long matches, but you want to get play in. So later in the tournament.
Yeah, they played some tough matches. They've got good match play. They've been under the gun. They know what it's like to come through and win matches. And also, you know, you played yourself into some good shape too. So, yeah. You know, that's going to be, I like Sinner and Djokovic, but I think I'm just as much, if not more, interested in the Medvedev match. I might be more interested in that tonight.
Yeah, I think no matter what, we get an interesting matchup. I mean, Medvedev had two sets to love against Nadal a few years back. You know, that was a tough loss for him, so he'd like another swing at it. All right, so who's going to win this thing on the men's side?
I'm going with Sinner. I think Sinner comes through and plays good enough tennis to beat Djokovic, and then with that confidence, he goes on and wins the tournament.
Okay. I mean, you figure if he's good enough to beat Joker, he's probably going to be playing good enough to beat the other guys, but you never know. But okay, cool. One more question from the Facebook page, and then I'll let you get to bed. Somebody asked, what are your thoughts on the open bar area next to some of the courts? So I guess some of the courts down in Australia have like bars, like right next to the courts in the stands, which I think is kind of cool. I think it would definitely add to the atmosphere, but what do you think?
I say, pour me a Foster's. I'll be right down. That says it all. Listen, the U.S. Open back in the day, they used to have the hamburgers and everything cooking right next to the stadium and right next to the practice course and everything. Holy Christ, all that did is say, come on, win in three sets so I can get a burger and a beer. I mean, how good can that be? I always told you, Brett, one of my favorite tournaments over the course of the year was in Sydney. It was at the Horden Pavilion, and it was a small indoor stadium. I think it held, you know, 4,000, maybe 5,000 people. But in the evening, they would serve, you know, they would serve dinner and they'd drinks, and the crowd was magnificent. I mean, they'd sit there, they'd have their drinks and get into the tennis and be a part of it. And, you know, talk about heckling. Oh my God. You know, but it was an amazing atmosphere, you know. Yeah. Now, I mean, listen, you can go too far too. Don't let me say that, you know, that's all great, but you know, people can go too far too. And when that happens, that's never good, but, you know, being able to, you know, go in and have a drink and watch some tennis and, you know, shit, I may be watching these, the matches on the Australian, you know, I might be having a beer myself, mm-hmm. You know, so what's wrong with that?
Nothing,
but it's all about, you know, the way people handle it. And, you know, without it going too far, I think, you know, pour me a Foster's. I love it.
I don't think anyone in Australia actually drinks Foster's. I think only in America.
What do you mean? That's all for us? You mean? Oh, well, send me a case. I'd love it.
Right. Yeah. We'll still pour us one. It's just fine. All right, Pops. I'm going to let you go. Go pack, and we will talk after your trip. You can check in. Let us know how you're doing in the golf tournament, and we'll get your thoughts on the finals after tonight. Got a tweet or something, and we'll check in with everybody.
You got it. I love you, son. Give the girls a hug for us, and I'll be talking to you soon. Get some rest.
Sounds good. We'll talk to everyone next week. Peace.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.